You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We get to reconnect with our friends serving the Lord in Latvia today, and excited to share that story with you. Thanks to Concordia University Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Joining us in the studio, the Reverend Dr. Quinton, Lindsay, and Carter Cundiff, the Cundiff family serving the Lord in Latvia. Welcome to The Coffee Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
So you're back in the States for a reconnect, visiting with us here at the LCMS International Center, and I'm sure visiting with other folks here in the States to share your story about how the Lord has given you to serve in Latvia. Let's start with that. How did the Lord bring you to serve in Latvia? When did you first start thinking about serving internationally?
It's actually kind of a story that had some length to it. I will share only a part of it just for the sake of...
We can make it a series if you want.
Yeah, let's do it.
You can come back.
So I was introduced to international missions when I was serving as a pastor in New Mexico, actually. There was someone who was going to go onto the field, and he came and presented about the situation of what the Christian church in Europe looks like at the time. I was also blessed to have a couple of members of the congregation there who were German nationals who had moved to the United States and would talk a lot about what the church looked like then as well. And my wife and I developed a great appreciation for just European culture and especially England. But we started kind of talking about, wouldn't that be like an interesting thing to do at some point maybe? And it was just sort of a pipe dream. Following COVID, I reached out to the Office of International Mission just to find what was going on in Europe in hopes to find a project that the congregation I was serving at the time could maybe connect with, just something that we could do to assist in mission efforts globally. And that conversation in which I specifically said, I do not want to call, I do not want to serve as an international missionary. That conversation led to some other conversations from here's what's going on to here's how help is needed to why don't you just come and help? And by that point, I said, you know, let me talk to my family about this. Let's have that conversation.
It's funny how when you're like, I'm not going to do, don't ask me to do this thing is the thing that you actually end up doing at some point.
Yes. Our Lord has a great sense of irony.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That is very true. So where does that bring you to today? Where are you guys today and what do you get to do every day?
So we serve in Riga, Latvia, and I'm a theological educator with Luther Academia, which is Luther Academy, and it's the seminary of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Latvia, but they began a joint project with LCMS back in, I believe, one of providing online English language instruction for pastoral candidates, and I work there as the dean of students, and I also serve as the head of our practical theology department.
So what does that look like in an international setting, but in English language, teaching practical theology?
So part of our classes, and this is a really significant component of our program, is intensives. So we actually gather the students together in either Riga or in Wittenberg, Germany. And we do in-person training for some of the practical theology things, right? You can't learn effectively how to lead the liturgy by watching online videos. You can't learn how to do bedside care for someone over the internet. So we want to get our students together to learn those skills in a classroom setting, like you would expect an American pastor to learn. Other things that we do for my other classes that I teach and for the rest of the classes that we teach as well are pre-recorded lectures that we upload because some of our students are actually in locations where they don't have a stable internet connection. And to do a 2-hour-long lecture with them, they're going to miss a good portion of it because they're constantly having to reconnect to the internet, having to rejoin the meeting and all that stuff. So we moved to having these lectures that we make available, and then every week we have a seminar where the students meet with the instructors. We talk about, you know, the high points from the lecture. What are some really key things that I want to make sure that you picked up? And it also gives the students the opportunity to come back and ask us questions and things too, and have that really helpful student-teacher interaction. And that is the foundation that we build upon when we have our students in person for intensives, where we can really build those personal communication and those personal relationships so that we can help to actually shape these men to serve our Lord.
That sounds like a really great opportunity for the students that you're able to reach through Luther Academy. Lindsay, what was it like for you and for the family to move overseas to a new country, new language? What was that like for you guys?
It was definitely not the easiest thing ever. Mm-hmm. You know, we had moved across country from St. Louis when Quentin finished his seminary education. We'd moved with Carter, who was a baby at the time, to the Oregon coast. Cool. And so, like, that's a long distance, you know, change. And obviously it's not nearly as far as moving to Eurasia, but it does sort of prep you in a way to do something like that. It can be difficult being that far from family, but I mean, technology is amazing. And, you know, there's Zoom, there's FaceTime, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So we can stay connected as we can.
Mm-hmm. How about for you, Carter? What was that like making that trip across the ocean to a whole new country, a whole new culture?
It was definitely very interesting. So like Mom said, we moved quite a bit in the States because Dad's a pastor. And so I have my very best friend in the States. And so moving away and having such a drastic time difference, that was harder. And then keeping in touch with family can be difficult at times, mm-hmm. because you have a long day and then it's, oh yeah, I forgot to call or FaceTime my family or friends. And mm-hmm. that's difficult.
Yeah. Sure, the long distance and the time difference, sure, makes it challenging.
For our family here in Central Time, it's an 8-hour difference for us. Mm-hmm. So we have to really calculate, you know, the time differences. I actually made a small spreadsheet for our families before we left. Like, here is the time, like, for us in Latvia. Here is, you know, the equivalent of your time here, just so they had something visual to kind of latch onto. So, you know, when they have their work day, you know, by the end of their work day, like, it's middle of the night for us again. So you have to plan things ahead of time, really, or just plan to call on the weekends and, you know, get them out of bed on Saturday morning.
No 3 a.m. text messages. Sorry.
Well, there might be.
Well, that's brilliant, creating a spreadsheet so you can see the time difference for everybody. The visual, I'm sure, is really helpful as well to help them make that connection with you as well. Yes.
We actually had a time recently, actually, we were in Latvia. We were doing grocery shopping, I think, and Lindsay's mom called. And it would have been middle of the night, super early morning.
Like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, Central Time.
And so, of course, when your phone rings and it's at that time, you think, oh no, what happened? Like, what's going on? And she was just up doing something and wanted to call and talk.
She's an early bird. So, I mean, that's fine. It's just, I wasn't expecting you to call at 4 a.m. your time when it's, you know, afternoon for us. And like, oh no, what happened? Right. Nothing. She just chipper and going to work at that time of morning.
Making the best use of that time.
Exactly.
Right?
Why not?
Exactly. What have you learned about the culture where you live, the community? Tell us a little bit about the community where you live.
We live in the city of Riga along a main thoroughfare. So we see a lot of people going up and down those streets. The general facade for most people is, some people say it's dour. It's very straight-faced. People are very much engaged in their own world. Mm. So, you know, smiling at strangers is seen as a really strange thing.
Oh, no.
And that took a little bit of getting used to. I mean, I'm from Iowa, a small town in Iowa. And if you don't smile at people, then, you know, clearly something is wrong. It is the exact opposite in Riga. So it was a change to make sure that your face is just kind of neutral. So you're not freaking people out on the streets.
That would be difficult for Midwesterners.
It is very difficult. And then coming back here, like, you kind of have to flip that switch again because, mm-hmm. you know, you're coming back to the Midwest again. You know, if you're not smiling at people, people wonder what is wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other ways you would describe the community in which you live in Riga?
So the Latvian people underwent significant difficulties in the 20th century mm-hmm. by Soviet occupation, Nazi occupation, and then Soviet occupation again. So I think it's really hard for Americans to begin to grasp what it is to live under communism and the scars that that has left on the people, on the culture, are honestly incalculable. The people sticking to them to kind of themselves or minding their own business, that was a survival tactic, mm-hmm. right? Under Soviet occupation, your neighbors could report you for anything. So you don't talk to your neighbors. You don't trust people around you because you can't. And if you do trust them, it might end up in your disappearance, right? Yeah. So that has been really challenging. What I will say about the Latvian people, though, is not only are they resilient, but once they know that you care about them and once they know that you are there with them, they are fantastically lovely people. Mm-hmm. They will
absolutely
talk your ear off once they know that you want to talk to them.
Carter, have you had the opportunity to make new friends in your new neighborhood?
So not in the neighborhood per se, because as I've noticed, there aren't many kids living in our apartment building because mm-hmm. we live in an apartment building. It's more common than mm-hmm. houses. So at school, I have made friends with most of my classmates and quite a few of the kids are Latvian ethnicity. So they might be half Russian, half Latvian, or Russian, but they are Latvian. Like, they've lived in Latvia their entire life. They're one of them. So I'd agree that they don't really talk to people that they don't know super well, but then they also have that, because my generation has a lot of Western influence, they're very talkative and strange because of some of the stuff that's on the internet.
We're learning about serving the Lord in Latvia. We're talking with the Kundiff family today. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50 plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We're talking with the Kundiff family, serving the Lord in Latvia, learning about life in Riga and what it means to serve in theological education internationally as well. How would you describe the things that Latvian culture values? What are the things that are important or to Latvian culture and to the Latvian community around you?
For many Latvians, religious and secular alike, family is a very, very high priority for them. Many families play a central role in a person's life. even up to when they're married and have their own family as well. So I would say that's one of the defining features. But then also there's a understandable, historically understandable, need to maintain their own history and their own identity because they had it almost stripped from them and they don't want to lose that again. So there are song festivals, story festivals, all kinds of celebrations that they can have just to celebrate being who they are. And it's honestly really wonderful to see that and to see how they maintain those connections. When we've gone to some events, you see people dressed up like you would expect to find at a Renaissance fair here, but mm-hmm. for them it's traditional clothing. And so it's actually really cool because we did some like reenactment type stuff when we lived in the United States. So we enjoy seeing some of that.
That is fun. What is the religious culture like in Latvia? I know you're teaching at Luther Academy, but what does it look like in the greater culture around you in Riga and in Latvia in general?
So Christianity it's a minority in terms of the population, in terms of if there is religion, it is going to be Christian more often than not. The Lutheran faith actually was rooted in Latvia by 1523. The city of Riga became Lutheran very early, actually. So they've maintained a certain level of that. As I understand it, after independence in 1991, many Latvian churches were packed. People came back because they weren't allowed to do it under communism. A lot of that has kind of fallen by the wayside, but the Latvian Christians, the Latvian Lutherans in particular, have a truly inspiring level of piety and appreciation for what they have. And it's remarkable to see that, to be able to worship alongside them. And I know it has actually been beneficial to me and my faith to be with them.
Let's talk about language. I know that where you teach, it's an English language program, so you're teaching an English language. But what about the rest of life? Do you have language barriers? Are you learning language to be able to interact in the community? Is that a requirement?
So we spent like a year doing Latvian language classes. Carter takes Latvian in school. It's a required course in all Latvian schools. Lindsay and I took classes for a year where we were doing class twice a week for an hour. And we got to the point where we can order food at a restaurant. We can do most of our business at like the post office, or we can in general get around. But if someone says something back to me to start a conversation, I'm immediately lost.
I didn't think this conversation would get this far.
Yeah, so we can do a lot of, you know, daily life things in Latvian, but as far as conversation, that's a lot harder. Latvian is known as one of the harder languages, you know, on the planet. I think right up there with, what is it, Czech and Polish or something like that, or similar. So it's not an easy language to learn, and there are only 2 million Latvian speakers on the planet anyway. So, you know, most Latvians, especially in Riga, know some level of English. Whether they have confidence in their English, you know, it's another thing entirely. A lot of them say, oh, I don't have much English, and, you know, they're speaking to you just fine.
I do want to say that us only getting to that level of our Latvian language is a failing on our part. We do want to continue on with that, and I will be picking that back up because it's important for a missionary to be able to interact with the people in their language. I'm fortunate in that most of my work actually is simply in English, but as a guest in their country, it behooves me to learn their language. And many of them, as Lindsay said, know a fair amount of English, which helps. But what I find often is I'll try to speak Latvian to them and they can hear that I'm an English speaker and they'll just respond to me in English.
Carter, what else do you get to do at school? You get to learn Latvian. You've met a lot of friends. What does school and daily life look like for you?
Yeah, so that's why I get to school. And so we have some time to just hang out before school starts. And I enjoy that. I hang out with my friend there who's from Korea, South Korea.
Oh, nice.
And so then we have a terrible locker space. It's very cramped and it's hard to crouch and get back up with my backpack. So our classes are just like regular classrooms. And so we have our classes. And then for language classes, we have French. We have to take French. I'm taking Spanish next year.
Instead of French.
Instead of French, yeah. Then we have Latvian because we have to, because living in Latvia. And I would say I'm not terrible at it. I can withhold a conversation for a few sentences.
Yeah.
Other than, oh, yeah. So in science class, unfortunately, there's a lot of evolution and long, like, evolutionists, all that stuff, all the atheist stuff.
Well, let's talk about some of the more important things. We've talked about learning language being an important thing, but what about learning the language of food? Because you mentioned being able to order food in a restaurant. What have you learned about Latvian food, and what have you come to love in Latvian cuisine?
So Latvian cuisine is largely influenced by other cultures around them. I don't know if they would like me saying that. I might get in trouble when I get back to Latvia now. But there's an influence of German food and an influence of Swedish and some Russian flavors. So you kind of combine a lot of those and you end up with the Latvian cuisine. Latvians in general really enjoy eating fruits and vegetables. They eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. They're not vegetarian, mind you, but it's just they're very prevalent. And the vegetables are usually quite affordable. So that's actually really nice. We eat a lot of vegetables while we're there too. The meats are a lot of, you know, like fried cutlet kind of things, sometimes with sauces, sometimes not. There are a couple of Latvian dishes that are kind of iconic. The first is a dish that you would eat at this time of year, which is the cold soup. And that's just what they call it, is cold soup.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kefir, which is like a
fermented.
Yeah, it's a fermented buttermilk.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's that with beets, with sugar beets, like pickled beets. So it's bright, like intensely pink.
Think Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Huh.
And it's actually pretty good. They put dill in it as well, which is a Russian flavoring. The Latvian flavoring for a lot of things is caraway. They like caraway seeds, but I think that also is an influence from German cuisine. Don't tell the Latvians I said that. Another really popular dish at Christmas time is gray peas, which I really like. So they're peas or little legumes that are gray, but they serve it with bacon and sour cream.
So
you can't go wrong.
Of course.
Yeah, it's very tasty. Yeah.
There's one other dish that's pretty iconic that we've learned in Latvia. It's actually, I think it's ported from Russia, but it's called silky kajoks, and it translates to herring in a fur coat.
Oh,
let me explain. So basically, there's a layer of mashed potatoes and then pickled herring, which is more marinated than like pickled with vinegar. It's more like brined. And beets and a little bit of cheese, green onion, and mayonnaise.
And boiled egg,
that's right. And it sounds horrible. Like that combination.
To an American palate, it sounds obscure.
Sounds horrible. But it actually it's pretty good. Surprisingly tasty.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Whenever we have American guests, you know, people who come and visit, we always make sure that we, you know, show them that dish and have them try it. And
often don't tell them what it is beforehand.
Yeah.
It works out.
It's been about a 50-50, I think, on whether people really like it or not. But it's nice. And the Latvians do really like to to use mayonnaise in like all of their salads and stuff. So
huh. Interesting.
Yeah. So I mean, if you're like a big pasta salad fan in the United States, you'd be all right in Latvia.
Very good. Carter, do you have a favorite Latvian dish?
I will eat just about anything.
That's
so
fair.
Latvian food is really not a problem for me.
Fantastic. Are there like desserts that are Latvian too?
Yeah.
Not every culture has like dessert, but.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a tradition. Sorry. It's a tradition. Well, there are two traditional. There are two that are very popular. I'll say that. So there's one that is in the shape of a pretzel, kind of.
Oh.
But it's like it doesn't have any holes and it's like covered in sugar and it's like crumbly. It's really tasty.
It's like a pastry, right?
Yeah. Mm. And then there's honey cake. I don't know I don't know how it's layered. Dad definitely does. He's the cook in the family. He knows how all the food works.
It's just really thin layers of this honey cake with like a light frosting in between the layers, and it's pretty traditional.
Mm-hmm.
There's also things like it's like a bread pudding almost made with rye bread, because rye bread is huge in Latvia. And I don't know how to describe it otherwise, other than it's blended,
mm-hmm.
and then usually have a little bit of like sweetened cream on top.
Mm.
These all sound horrible, I know, but in reality, they're not bad at all.
It's rye bread with raisins and some cream and usually some berries and stuff. It's sweetened. It's quite nice.
That sounds delicious.
It does. I'm actually hungry
I'm
now.
I'm so hungry now.
How can we stay informed on the Lord's work in Latvia, especially at Luther Academy, and follow what's going on with the Kunda family?
So we definitely have a newsletter that I put out every month. And then we also have our Facebook group page called The Kundiffs in Latvia.
Very good. We'll share that in the program notes today. Thank you so much for being our guest, Kundiff family, and sharing your story and about the Lord's work in Latvia. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.